you treated me like a fool. I even gave up right for wrong, trying to get along with you. When I wanted to hold you close, you were always too tired. Well, you had some place to go. Listen, Dad.
Welcome to another African Rhythms. I'm David Love Jones, and that was Betty Levette, Anthem of Anthems, Your Turn to Cry. Well, this week we got a very special show. Not only do we have Mike Ingram and Jason Hoover back, but we're going to do a heartfelt tribute tonight, just in a little bit longer, to Bobby Taylor. So welcome, Jason and Mike.
Good evening, brother.
Hey, what can I say? It's good to see you again, my man from Philly. And David Love Jones, you got it all together tonight, it seems.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, you know, it's since we were last on the air, you know, it's sad to see Bobby Taylor has passed. I mean, we were hoping ourselves to even help document his life after we get through our documentary on Jason Hoover. So, you know, it's sad, really, that being the impact that he had on Vancouver.
Not only that, David, he had a great impact on me. We were happening at the same time, doing the same circuit, and he was my mentor. I gotta admit it.
Yeah.
He was my man. You know, he was the one I looked up to.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into many aspects of Bobby Taylor's story. In fact, we're going to play some segments for my interview with Bobby some 9 years ago now, back when he lived here. I went down to Rossini's, and there's going to be some segments about Marvin Gaye, about his Anthem of Anthems, Does Your Mama Know About Me, and its impact and significance, and, you know, just his, and Marvin Gaye, his relationship with Marvin Gaye. So, you know, interesting stuff.
We can't forget about what his contribution to music, period, means, especially to soul, especially in an area that seemed to want to reject the natural talent that was around it. You know, when you consider what Bobby did here in naming the group after his adopted city, that's a big stretch.
Taylor and the Vancouver.
Yeah, you don't hear even singers from music towns like Philadelphia or Chicago or New York name themselves after where they come from. You know, that's something that's truly different, and it should have been recognized, and more often it should have been encouraged, because you boosted a whole city. I can tell you, I knew if Vancouver existed when I was a kid when that song came out, but I didn't know what a Vancouver was, if there was such a thing. I mean, I'm being serious, you know.
Yeah, no, his significance was major. But let's focus on a couple tracks before we start dropping bits of the Bobby Taylor interview that I did from a few years ago. But next, Ethel Beattie. Now, here is somebody, she's associated with Roy Ayers, in fact, for a one and only solo album.
You know, I like that kind of stuff. You know, yeah, Roy don't pick no junk. So anybody who's rolling with Roy, they are definitely skilled in all styles, jazz, soul, whatever.
But Roy Ayers is a legend. You know, I think everybody's played with him. He's been countless numbers of musicians and entertainers and singers and that, but not that. They're taught by Roy Ayers.
My body and mind that makes me love you. Now that you're free, can't you see that we need each other? You make my make it with another lover. If you just feel, feel the loving that I have for you. Without your love, you know I'd be so blue. Love you, yes I do. Yes, I do, yes, I do.
Satisfaction. 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 to talk to you a minute. You know, sometimes we have a tendencies, or should I say we forget what a woman needs every now and then. That is, if you want to keep your thing together. Listen to me now. Do the things that keeps a smile on her face. Say the thing that make her feel better every day. Man, you got to stay on your P's and Q's. If you don't, the woman you can easily lose. Oh, I had a love and I lost her. And no one can help me share the pain that you caused me. Oh, a woman gotta have it. I believe she's gotta know that she's needed around. When you kiss her, you gotta make her feel it. Every time, boy, she wants to know that she's not walking on shaky ground. You might find a tear trace. Maybe the girl might never say a mumbling word. But you better make sure that her voice is heard. Oh, I had a love, a true love, and I lost it. I'm suffering all this pain that that love caused me. Oh, a woman got to have it. You gotta give it to her.
The great Bobby Womack, of course. And do you remember back in the early 70s, Jason, was that having an impact a little bit around here, Bobby Womack?
The other side of the record. Unfortunately, it was the other side of the record, David.
That one wasn't a hit.
No,
because that was one of his biggest R&B hits.
Yeah, the other one.
What other one?
Famous. So he came here once, too. I know this for a fact.
Yeah.
He did it well here. The people loved him.
Loved
him. Yeah, it was at the Commodore.
He did play here, yeah, at some point.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, no, Bobby Womack left a big impact anyway.
Yeah, and you never have to worry about your music being stolen when you use your own chords. He obviously obviously liked those chords from Stop On By, because all he did
was... Oh, you mean Rufus Stop On By.
Rufus's version of... Really,
well, he does Stop On By too.
But he does that too. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Those are the same chords. He just took it up half step
right.
on yeah. that.
Well, you know, you can
guitar.
Kind of see the influence of Marvin Gaye, what's going on
yes.
too.
Oh, yeah. No. Bobby
had that sound in the back. That was definitely. What did Marvin call it? What was the groove he called? That kind of mercy.
Mercy, right. Yeah. I mean, that was some of the most creative stuff going on in that period, but. I suppose its impact in Canada overall would be reduced to say.
Yeah, Dave,
and that
yeah.
depends on who's releasing the music.
Because yeah,
that
true.
Time frame, everybody, Bobby was doing movie scores. I mean, Bobby Womack.
Yeah.
Bobby, Curtis, James Brown, everybody was opening up. And, of course, you know, Ike doing Shaft. Mm. That opened up a whole playing field.
Superfly seems to be one of the most successful.
Exactly. Yeah. Even to this day, the music sounds is just as timeless as the movie.
But there you go.
That thing has lasted and sold so many copies. It's just another reflection of the fact that all this stuff was going on for people's consumption, and some folks either embraced it or they just walked away from it and wouldn't
just
even let it
1%
in.
I would love to have of that music track. That would be fantastic. This is my multi-million dollars, David. Yeah. And, you know, Mike, it's just weird how it never died. It's a song.
Well, we've got another artist we haven't heard before very much on the show. And this is pretty heartfelt, but this is going back to the late 60s. Wow. Freddie Hughes.
Freddie Hughes, yes. We all know.
I need your love. Found out you don't even care. It seems, baby, I've been wasting my time, and now I've got to get you off my mind so I can get some sleep and find someone who cares.
Oh, I need your love, I need more than you'll ever know. And I hate the thought of ever letting you go.
You've been playing a game. You've been abusing my soul. The way you've been treating me, girl, it sure is cold. Are you glad, babe? One day you'll be sad and think of me.
Freddie Hughes, what an incredible track. Just found out.
Track. I have just heard that for the first time, and you were making copy about that, talking about how this is connoisseur soul. Mm. It is, and it is about what you're exposed to, because even real music cities don't play stuff like this unless it was the old soul station. So it really is important that the fact that these stations aren't on the, don't exist anymore, you might find it somewhere out in cyberspace on a satellite station, but it doesn't give you the full effect of what the song means and what the artist was trying to say.
Well, when something is crafted that well and you're like, and it's unknown, you think, damn, what could be out there? You know, like just how Ron Carson produced by and the Chevelles. But yeah, I really don't know much about
them. I have
them.
No clue. I'm not even pretending. This is a beautiful track. But Janis was carrying the Whispers in that time frame as well. So
Early Whispers.
I remember them having I Only Went Met Them With My Feet. Well,
they did that on that label. They had the two twins, and then they had the tall guys in the middle. So were they there then?
William and Walter Scott. Yeah, they were there.
So I just heard them.
Mm-hmm. That goes back to another era. Yeah. I mean, really, like when you listen to soul groups and soul perfection like that, like, part of it for sure comes from the doo-wop, you know, like part of the craft of the vocal. Mm-hmm. Although it's not in a doo-wop setting, you kind of see that that comes from the old, the mastery.
Yeah. That's a good observation, David. That is true. You can hear it.
Yeah, but you know, we're going to get into some little aspects of Bobby Taylor's history and life. In this first segment, I first was speaking to Bobby down at Rossini's. I guess this would have been about 2008. And he actually I record him doing People Get Ready.
Okay.
And this is with, who's the piano player? He came and played with you for a little while.
Oh, you're talking about the Chinese boy.
Doug Louie.
Doug Louie, yeah.
So Doug Louie's with him. And then the drummer, I'm not that familiar with, but he's pretty good.
He's dead now, but he played with, yeah, I know who you're talking about. The blonde-haired fellow, the lefty who is the righty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's good. All right, well, let's go into this. This
will be good.
Yeah, we'll go into a little bit of this Bobby Taylor, and then we can talk about it once we get out of this first segment here on African Rhythms on CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio, Vancouver.
It's great to have you on African Rhythms Radio.
Thank you, David.
We're down here at Rossini's, and I mean, I know this is a very, shall we say, a comfortable place for you to play, and you're around friends down here. You know, it's a wonderful venue.
Well, yeah, it's a place where I can keep my my chops up, be around my friends. I love working the two guys I'm working with. I taught them both when they were kids. And it's special to work with somebody that you taught and they're playing so well now. They were kids that used to hang around my original group and listen to us, and they wanted to learn. And I was just always, I came from such a large family that I was just one guy that would always help a kid out. Most of the guys in the business won't help a kid out, or nobody, you know. They don't really give a kid in. But me, I'll help a kid in a minute. If I can keep one kid off the streets,
yeah,
I've done a good thing in life. So people for the train going, picking up passengers, coast to coast. They just the key, open the doors and portals. There's hope for all among those who love the homes.
Rest in peace to Bobby Taylor. Incredibly, that was me. That was me with the Dap Machine down at Rossini's. I guess it was about 2006, actually, quite a long time ago now.
You know, I'm more annoyed about the fact that there was so much noise in the background, not because of just music, but the people
weren't paying attention.
They weren't paying attention, exactly. It was like, somebody like that, you're sitting back, okay, you're going to listen to him first, and you'll hear the odd conversation underneath it all, but they're braced to hear what the person or the performer is going to say, and they weren't into it.
Well, when I heard how much he's getting paid, being here and whatever, you know, it was sad for me, really.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, a talent as big as Bobby's, and, you know, he's getting a mere pittance for appreciation. Yeah.
That's just unbelievable. The thing I like about it, though, is that Bobby will always be regenerating. He'll never die. His music will always regenerate because he is Bobby Taylor, and
yeah,
he created the Vancouver's
This is local soul history.
Yes, and we're right from here in Vancouver. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, for him to come here, and it's an all Tommy Chong and an all Canadian bands,
that's
and
right.
He may have been from America, but the fact is, what he did for the local scene, it was important. And when you, the listener, hear all the aspects of how important his story was, you'll realize what a legend we had, and more of you would have gone out to see him, and he would have got more gigs and more appreciation. And all I can say is this. When I met him, and he sized up that I had some kind of a soul knowledge or whatever, he said, "Damn, I wish there'd been a guy like you earlier in, you know, being here, in the 60s.
Yeah, you know? That's what I'm talking
and,
about.
And he, you know, he could see that I knew all the stuff the British guys knew about or some of the more learned Americans. But that's how sad it was for him here. There wasn't more of that.
Yes, I'm glad he had a chance to defend himself, even if it wasn't for a nanosecond, and saying, "I've always looked to pick up young talent, help them, show them things, and whatnot." And this comes from his lips, because we know a talent like that to not get the notice that he has is because gatekeepers are deliberately holding back or demeaning him by not including him. You can't have a group called the Vancouvers and whatnot, and nobody in this town will push that because they're recognizing the fact that this is a beautiful part of the world, and you don't have people to counter that or at least support it.
Well, here is a fact that, you know, most people associated with Bobby, and especially associated with Jason, all had success in life. So if Jason didn't have the same, and Bobby Taylor at times didn't have the same, Bobby Taylor had to sue Motown to get some kind of a settlement. And we're about to, in this next segment, get into that about Bobby's association with writing ABC and I Want You Back for Motown. And what that meant, because, you know, that's serious business. We're talking about some of the biggest pop songs of all time.
Thank you.
Not only that, but he was the producer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You must not forget that.
7 albums, you know, pretty much till the end of the Motown.
Yeah,
you mentioned that on another show,
I
checked that out, and you were right. Like, it was right till the end, right till Epic. Mm-hmm. Bobby Taylor was there. Right till them Motown going to L.A., and even when they went to L.A., Bobby was still a little bit associated.
Mm-hmm.
Even
right.
at the beginning of Epic, that is... And you wondered why Michael Jackson was so thankful towards Bobby Taylor. Mm-hmm. This is because of things like this. So let's get into the segment next here on African Rhythms. And this is my interview with Bobby Taylor back in 2006. And here he is talking about Michael Jackson.
Here you are, Bobby Taylor. And, you know, you've been in Vancouver all this time. And, you know, the history books say, or... The way it's out to, say, your international fans, Bobby, is that here you were in Vancouver, a member of a couple of members of the Supremes. I guess they came and saw you here playing.
Yeah, it happened like this. The Supremes were appearing at the Cave, and the Cave was the Mecca in those days, back in the 60s, the early 60s. And Tommy Chong and I, everybody knows who that is, from Cheech and Chong, Tommy and I. Tommy was in the band.
He was in the Vancouvers.
He was in the Vancouvers, and so was Jimi Hendrix at that time.
Yeah.
So when they first, you know, I brought the girls over, and when they first heard us, they sent the road manager to a telephone. Now, I didn't find this out until later, but the very next night, Berry Gordy Jr. was in our club down on Davy and Burrard. It was called the Elegant Parlor.
So he flew in?
He flew in, yes. Yeah. But the only two people that came to see us was Florence Ballard and Mary Wilson. Diana Ross was too, she was too good.
Yeah.
You know? So anyhow, that second night, like I said, Berry Gordy came in, and the third day, we were signed with Motown.
That's incredible that Barry would sign you so quickly. I mean, it's not like he was doing that all the time, you know, and especially the fact that you were here, out here in Vancouver. Yeah.
You know who he did it with the other time? Michael Jackson, after I took Michael to him. It was, I brought Michael to him, right?
He was on Steel Town back then, their first singles.
Yeah, he was on Steel Town, but that, you know, that was...
Small Town.
That was real, no, that was garbage too. Yeah. Michael was screaming, trying to sound like James Brown and so forth and so on. He didn't know what he was doing.
Well, he was only 5 years old.
No, well, yeah, and then when he turned 8 is when I found him. And
And you knew right away?
Oh, I knew right away.
You knew he was had started.
Oh, yeah. I knew it right away. Because
he could sing and dance.
He would not go away from me. He would not leave me. He watched me on every show. And at those times, we were doing shows from 9 a.m. in the morning until 12 midnight. This was in Chicago at the Regal Theater. And my co-star, believe it or not, was Jerry Butler.
Wow.
The Jerry Butler.
The
Iceman. The Iceman, that's right. And we had a hell of a show, and those kids were opening.
So then you started touring.
So I started touring. Yeah. We went into Chicago, and here these little guys open up the show. And the promoter told me, say, hey, man, you better look at these little kids. This little boy needs to be, somebody needs to do something. And
you took him under your wing.
I took him under my wing. And the rest is history.
Okay, the first album. Tell me about the first album, because, I mean, it was the Mizell brothers were on it. I Want You Back, and those first tracks.
They were on it,
yeah.
But that was because Barry put them on it.
Yeah.
Me and Barry had a falling out. So Barry wanted to punish me, and I'd done all of those songs already. And then he put these guys on it to mix and to do this and change a few things here and change a few things there. It didn't change what I'd already done. And it was, I Want You Back, I'll Be There.
That's a huge
maybe thing. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Then,
So solo Michael as well.
Huh?
So that was a solo Michael track. Right?
Yeah, but that was when Barry was trying to get the kids to go. See, Ben had a lot of background on it. Barry just wiped it off. Oh, yeah. Right. He was the owner.
Yeah. So he played God over your arrangements.
Over everybody's. Over everybody's. Except for smoking.
So you weren't digging that too much?
No.
Yeah.
And I offered him a fight, and he accepted it, and we fought at Bob Hoop's ranch. For, I'm telling you,
like a
serious,
fight.
A fight. See,
like,
I was a
like
boxer.
Boxing.
I was a boxer, and he was too.
Yeah.
I was on the 60 Olympic team, but he was a professional.
Yeah.
Mattered to me because I knocked him out in two rounds, and we fought in front of nothing but very rich people. It was a thing that we were doing for Sugar Ray Robinson's youth camp.
Yeah.
And when we did that, Barry promised that if I beat him, right, that he would give the youth camp $1 million.
Did he?
He gave him $1 million.
Nice.
There you go. So that's part two of my interview from 2006 with the local legend of legends. And that's Bobby Taylor commenting on Michael Jackson and his writing of the songs that he says the Mizell brothers came in and, well, the way I put it was they funkified it up. And what Bobby said in return was they didn't do anything that wasn't there already.
Yeah, two things clearly from that. The fact that Bobby Taylor's actions had to have a direct influence on Michael Jackson's business sense because he saw he got screwed producing their first 7 albums. So you know Mikey had to take notes mentally. So when he left Motown and hit Epic, and Quincy Jones got involved in making his sound more mature, he was very well aware of that. Like I said, he ended up buying the Beatles catalog, so he obviously knew something.
Yeah.
And the other point I want to make real quick is that the infrastructure that was left by the Chitlin' Circuit, by those places like the Regal in Chicago, like the Fox in Detroit, like the Uptown in Philly, like the Apollo in New York, this was the blueprint for all the soul acts. When cats wanted to do a new tune, they were on the road and they're doing these spots. And I'm sure there are others, but these were the main ones where talent
at 8 years old, for Michael and his brothers to be in there and hustling like that and trying to get better. And like Bobby said, they were crap in the Steeltown early days. But Bobby got their act together. he got their show together for the presentation for Motown. And then what another revelation, Bobby Taylor says. You know, in one of the seven or so albums he did for Motown in Ben, he did some production on it, which Barry, as he said, he took it all off. So, wow, what a revelation. But, you know, in the next segment that we're going to listen to with our interview with Bobby Taylor. Now, this is a pretty important one, Jason. This is when Bobby's talking about, does your mama know about me? So this is pretty important because this is an historic moment, right? Yeah, no, I mean, it's an historic moment in local soul. So there will never, you know, for Bobby to go to Motown and then for this to be, was it not a number one soul?
It was a number one soul hit. And again, it was not a typical Motown tune because there was drama to this song. This wasn't one of those bubblegum, you know, meet me at the dance or some nonsense like that. This was real hardcore stuff about subjects that people did not want to broach, an intra-ethnic relationship.
Yeah, well, Bobby explains it all right here.
Hey, I've never heard a black man named Bobby Charles.
Well, I mean, let's face it, I mean, music has no color.
Well, we had great white guys playing, you know, Jack Brokenshaw. Hey, I've never heard a black man named Bobby Charles.
Well, I mean, let's face it, I mean, music has no color.
No color.
I mean, I think, you know, as long as you properly credit... As long as you properly credit where the roots of the music are, you know, I mean, I think this is one of the most important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean, interestingly enough, though, your first Motown record, people don't consider it to be particularly Motown sounding.
Yeah, you know? Because we were completely different. Yeah. First, we were the very first mixed band in the whole world.
Racially mixed band
in the whole world.
Yeah.
Second, when we came up with Does Your Mama Know About Me, first everybody thought it was about a black man and a white woman, automatically.
Yeah. Automatically.
Yeah. But it wasn't. It was about Tommy Chong. There's Tommy Chong right there as we look at it.
Yeah.
It was Tommy Chong.
Yeah.
See, there's Tommy and I right there, see?
Oh, nice.
Tommy Chong and Tommy Chong's wife, that's what it was about. Tommy Chong's wife is black. Tommy Chong, everybody knows is Chinese. There we are, happy sleeping.
Well, we're blessed with a lot of Chinese culture in Vancouver, what can we say?
You know.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, for Bobby Taylor to be, you know, to get signed to Motown, to come and with Tommy Chong to create this group in Vancouver, and then to go off to Detroit, and then to put this song out, and to go to number one in the R&B, and wow, like, what a legacy, putting Vancouver on the map, like, nothing's ever happened like that.
I'm not going to blow smoke at your butt, David, but that was excellent work that you did, because I've inhaled at least 5 books on soul, cover to cover. Not any time in any of those books did anyone ever say that
it was Tommy Chong's relationship
of Does Your Mother Know About Me had to do with Tommy Chong being Asian and whoever the other partner was being what they were. And again, the only song that I know of that genre that was even close to that was Janis Ian doing Society's Child in the mid-60s and stuff that. This was definitely taboo stuff. And it came here on top of Berry Gordy's objections, because he didn't want a song like that. But Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers was an intact group, just like Gladys Knight and the Pips was, just like Junior Walker and the All-Stars were. And he couldn't mess with their material as much as he could with other others.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's a real revelation. And I don't know if I've recorded that part, but he also mentions that with Tommy Chong, that being on the road with Tommy and the way they would pay your expenses, there was some problem between Tommy Chong's girlfriend or something was going on. So that did cause some problems that ended up, the Vancouvers ended up, and Bobby ended up going solo. And actually, in the next segment, we actually talk about the Don't Be Afraid song, which, as Bobby profoundly says in this comment, was written by a homeless person that he knew in Los Angeles. So it's got a very heavy, but this is actually from Bobby's second album for Motown, which was the solo album, and so which we have right here, Tailor Made Souls. So this, you know, to soul connoisseurs around the world, Tailor Made Soul is one of the greatest albums. I mean, we're talking about the record that's got I've Been Blessed. Mm-hmm. It's got the Out in the Country, the Rick James written song. And, you know, this is just, isn't it an incredible record, Jason?
I thought it was right from the get-go. And Tailor Made Soul, I thought, was just a perfect name. For, you know, it just...
It's sophisticated.
It's pretty good.
It's got your favorite song on there. I know
Melinda?
Little Miss Sweetness.
Little Miss Sweetness.
Yeah,
is
I know. I know you like that rock and tempo. Yeah.
I love that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go back to Bobby in his own words for our tribute to Bobby Taylor, the local Vancouver soul hero and legend around the world, and Bobby's commentary about his second solo album coming up next.
You had a hit, Does Your Mama Know About Me? In fact, it was number one R&B hit.
Yeah.
You know, so you had some success with that first album. In fact, Does Your Mama came out in 68. Yeah. They finally released the single. See, this is where historians like myself and British and Japanese people and people that really appreciate what you're all about really come into it, because, I mean, your second record was a solo record. It was no longer with the Vancouvers, and that was partially to do with the fact you were producing Michael Jackson and some of the things
going on. Well, not really. What it was, believe it or not, was my band was fired.
Yeah.
While I was producing Jackson 5.
So they got
selfish. It was because of Tommy.
Yeah.
Tommy was carrying his now wife with him on the road.
Yeah.
So Motown was paying his now wife and his wife here.
Yeah.
And they thought that they were supposed to do it, which they really were.
Yeah.
So Tommy kind of screwed that up. So they punished all of my guys for that.
Yeah. So that was real changes for you. But I mean, the funny thing was, you know, follow-up records are always difficult, Bobby. I mean, as you well know, you know, I mean, follow-up records can mean that are not successful, but yet you came back with this record that, by all accounts, you know, to historians now, is one of the greatest follow-up records ever. You know, I mean, it has, we could talk about a couple of the tracks. I mean, Don't Be Afraid. I mean, tell me about that track. I mean, that's a phenomenal
track. Don't Be Afraid, if people was to see the man who wrote that and produced it on there, they would go somewhere and cry.
Yeah.
He's a street person in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So sad that I saw that happen.
You say that the love you had is gone, empty, sad, and all alone, all by yourself. And you say you'll never give your heart again and let it be torn apart by anyone else. But don't be afraid. For I won't harm you.
open your eyes and finally seen all of life's hard realities and speeding cars. But don't be afraid, I won't let them harm you. Raise your head and accept this love I offer you, and we'll play among the stars, and love will be wherever we are, just as long as we
That's a very, Jason, a very lush track, Bobby Taylor. Very lush production.
It was very lush. I love everything that Bobby does. I mean, he's been my mentor for years. I haven't really got a choice. I'm just sitting here trying to think, which is my favorite song?
Yeah.
And you know what it is? You would never guess, neither you would.
I would guess Melinda.
Yeah!
I like Melinda too.
That was a tough two.
Yeah, we might be able to get that in there somehow, you know, as we get through this. But yeah, no, there's Bobby's ballads are killer. But you know, that is that kind of a sophisticated track is the kind of stuff the UK guys like when they get into the kind of 70s mid tempo. And that's got a very special kind of a feel, you know.
Are we talking Melinda?
That Don't Be Afraid.
Okay, Don't Be Afraid is a good track, man.
It's very classy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's got a lot of class. But, you know, Bobby's association with Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
He says when he was a kid in Washington that he was a neighbor. Mm-hmm. So it is even possible that on a street corner, Bobby Taylor and Marvin Gaye themselves sang some doo-wop harmony.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Anything's possible in old Detroit, man. I'm going to tell you that right now.
No, but he was born in Washington, as he says. And the Four Pharaohs in New York was his first group, which was a doo-wop group.
That was a doo-wop group.
Yeah, you know. So his association with Marvin Gaye, along with his association with Michael Jackson, I mean, the part that Bobby Taylor played in music culture is incredible.
This is what gets me angry, because these same gatekeepers would try to say that Bobby Taylor's career did not matter. Look what he affected. He affected Michael Jackson to do great work. He affected Marvin Gaye. And he took on people who probably wouldn't have gotten a chance anywhere else, because there was nothing here in Vancouver to indicate that this was some sort of burgeoning soul town.
This is some new Motown. No, it wasn't.
Exactly.
Man. Well, Bobby was here in the late 70s after you released in the mid 70s your Jason Hoover solo album. Bobby was here. In fact, when did he settle with Motown? What year was that?
Okay, it had to be 1979.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So he got some kind of I've read about it online now and have confirmation about it, but he got some kind of settlement for being part of the corporation. I mean, a healthy settlement.
Including
a home hell for his wife. Yeah, they
owed him. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Including a home for his wife. You can't beat that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Bobby's experience here in Vancouver parallels your own in many ways.
It does. It's amazing. I didn't copy him or anything. It's just the way the two of us were going. Right. And when I found out that he lived in, or even nobody really knows, he says Washington, he was born. I was told it was Red Deer. Not Red Deer, Alberta.
You saying that there's potentially a relative connection, because Bobby is actually part First Nations, actually.
That's right. Just like me. I have my First Nation parts.
So, you know, it is a little bit of a mystery, all the details about Bobby Taylor. But now we're going to get into some heavy stuff, because now we're going to get into some heavy revelations about his association with Marvin Gaye. This is spellbinding stuff.
Well, I mean, getting back to Marvin, I mean, I think that some people, you know, very emotional people, and doing something like cocaine or whatever just affected him too much, you know? He became obsessed or whatever.
No, really. Let me tell you about Marvin. I knew him so well.
Yeah.
Here's what was wrong with Marvin. Marvin had a phobia about his parents. That's what killed Marvin.
Yeah.
Right? It was... Marvin didn't think his father liked him.
Yeah.
I've got to tell the world about it. I want to stand right up and shout it. Well, lucky me, baby.
Not yet.
Insecurity.
Insecurity wasn't even a word.
Yeah.
Then you had a mother who was domineering.
Yeah. Baby, I don't mind stormy weather. Oh, the rain no longer makes me blue. And I don't mind if my friends get together and leave me out of everything, everything they do.
Who didn't want the father anymore after 54 years of marriage? Now, what does a man or a woman do after 54 years of marriage who's thinking about getting a divorce? I don't think they can go out and party no more.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So she was the catalyst of Marvin being dead.
Because I'm no good without you. But I know as long as I've got you. Oh, lucky me, baby. Lucky me.
It was her. But then you look at it like this. Marvin died. She died.
Yeah.
Marvin's brother died. Marvin's sister died.
Frankie
died from drinking. His sister died.
He was a talent himself.
Yes, he was. But Sweetsie died, right? From drugs.
Yeah.
Right? And guess who died last?
Who?
The man who killed Marvin, his father.
Yeah.
And people didn't know that that man had a brain tumor at the time.
Yeah.
But Marvin Gaye was beating him.
Yeah.
I know what happened.
Abusive relationship.
It was abusive because, you know, his father was a strict, I don't know what you would call him. He didn't let him do anything. It was only church, you know.
It was a little bit warped.
He was completely warped.
Yeah.
The old man was. But
yeah.
I always learned as a kid, honor thy father and thy mother.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say, I don't care what they do. Honor
them.
The Bible says that. Yeah. It doesn't say only if they or only if she. It doesn't say that. It says honor thy father and thy mother. So I don't care what they do. You won't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
If you do what that Bible tells you to do. Those people who don't do it, they gotta pay for it.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. I mean, speaking about Marvin, how religious he was and how spiritual he was, yet how messed up his life was.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. He brought a lot of that on himself.
But I mean, what an incredible talent. I mean, the world may never see another talent.
Well, I'll say this about him. There was never another person that was as good as he was in a studio. Marvin wasn't nothing on stage. Marvin Gaye was the worst on stage. He was worst, and then next to him, this will blow you away, was Stevie Wonder was the one that was the worst one on stage, and then Marvin next.
I didn't mind Marvin on stage sometimes, like for instance, Distant Lover or something like that. He did really well.
Yeah, but I'm talking about his complete show.
What about the fact that he wouldn't show up a lot?
Oh, yeah. That's because of the drugs.
Yeah.
And he would
he's
be
notorious
there.
For that.
He would be there. I did the tour, the 77, 78 tour with him.
Yeah.
And Marvin would not come on stage.
Yeah.
I took his backup group.
Yeah.
And I had to sing most of the songs.
Yeah.
Right? Marvin would sit up there and hold a microphone and act like he was singing. And it was all me.
Go.
Bobby Taylor himself in Vancouver doing What's Going On. It just doesn't get any better than this. That's about as epic as you get. Local, the greatest ever singer to come here from the U.S. and inject his talent into our scene, doing What's Going On. Does it get any better than that, Jason?
No, except for Stevie Wonder and Fingertips.
No, yeah, it really, that was the epitome of soul and funk. And
you may have been at that gig, I think. Yeah, you were telling me.
I lived through it all.
Yeah, yeah, you were around for that gig. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, Marvin and Bobby, knowing each other from childhood, and Bobby being exposed to some of the incredible dramatic things going on in Marvin Gaye's life. It appears.
Yeah, it very much appears. And Frankie Crocker, program director for WBLS in New York, verified everything that Bobby Taylor said the day he was murdered. He literally stopped broadcasting and did a show dedicated to Marvin. He covered 6 hours on air touching this stuff. And he talked about how the news or the media was going to screw Marvin in talking about, of course, all the negative stuff. And he actually talked about some of those points that Bobby Taylor touched on. So hearing all of that really sent a chill down my spine.
Many things that Bobby Taylor said in this interview, since I did the interview with him, I've been able to confirm. Like, you know, that he wrote ABC and I Want You Back. That's now confirmed. That he was a boxer, that Barry was a boxer, now confirmed. You know, so a lot of this, maybe to some of the gatekeeper media around here, it didn't seem that Bobby was telling the truth.
But
and
who was the boxer? Who was the boxer?
They were talking about how Berry Gordy and Bobby Taylor boxed for charity. Yeah.
Bobby whooped that ass.
Can you believe that went on?
That's like, pretty hard. That's
I know. Bobby
Bobby
has the most spellbinding stories that, like, when I heard from the local media, oh, well, Bobby's a bullshit or whatever. The truth is that Bobby, rightfully so, was trying to let people know some of his accomplishments, and exactly, the local media was not there to accept. Instead, racism and prejudice was the order of the day.
And that's what you got to say. You got to say that. You got to call that song exactly what it is, because you had Jason and you had Bobby here at the vanguard of what should have been a music movement from this part of the country,
really?
And it was all squashed because gatekeepers didn't like who was on those microphones and singing and everything else, because clearly, and this is no disrespect to any other singers here in Vancouver in that area at that time, Jason and Bobby were clearly heads and shoulders above everybody else.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, that's, if you look at the documentary from the early 80s, the CBC did on the local scene, that's what your contemporary other musicians were saying. It was the Epics were the top group in town, you know, and when Bobby Taylor left, that seems to clearly be the story. But even if Bobby Taylor had stayed, you would have been one of the top groups in town. So it doesn't matter either way. It's not about whether Bobby Taylor was here or not. The Epics reached the highest level of musicianship, singing, and if they'd given him a chance, composition, you know, that would have happened. But another aspect of Bobby Taylor's story is giving the kid a break. And we're talking about Rick James next, and Bobby Taylor being at Motown Records. And who walks through the door? Rick James himself. Let's hear the story next.
All right. So what happened, Bobby? I mean, after that second album, and, you know, we were talking to you, you know, the incredible tracks. I've Been Blessed was a Northern Soul big track. I mean, to this day, people love that track.
They love I've Been Blessed. I'm going to tell you something else they love down there. Out in the country.
Yeah.
And people wouldn't believe who produced and wrote that song on it.
Yeah.
Rick James. But his real name was Rick Matthews.
Yeah. So that was early on for him.
That was his first.
Yeah.
I was his first anything.
So you recognize his talent?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And the kid came to me one day, he said, man, I need a break.
Yeah.
I said, okay, what you got? He said, I got this one song, man. Will you try it for me? I said, cool.
Yeah.
And the rest is history after I did that for him.
Yeah, yeah.
As I watched the golden sun creep down the mountainside, I turned my face to the wind to blow away these tears I cried. Walking down the path, I kicked a stone to release some pain. Thinking back to days when love was just like sunshine instead. You're alone. Oh, 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 oh.
And when you get Rick James, a child, coming to Bobby Taylor, and you get him together with Bobby Taylor, that's what you get. And Bobby Taylor gave him the compliment of giving him, you know, the opening track on his album. I mean, if that's not high compliment enough, he gave the kid a break.
Exactly. He would never have done something like that to someone who was an amateur or anything like that. So clearly he had musical knowledge, and Taylor saw it and gave him an opportunity to reflected on an album. That just doesn't happen overnight to anybody.
Well, I mean, the quality of this album is just unsurpassed. It's one of the greatest soul records ever made. I mean, this deserved to be much bigger than it was as a follow-up to...
We got to rewind to what you said about sophisticated soul. If you're in an atmosphere where this sort of thing is produced and encouraged, then you're going to get knowledgeable listeners. Which is why the Brits, you have to give the British credit for this, they embraced all this stuff. They created a whole genre and had a whole bunch of people working simply because they loved the music and that the music was good.
Well, all I've Been Blessed is actually probably in the Northern Soul all-time top 100. Mm. I mean, it's a huge song. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, it's not even the only Northern Soul track on it. Little Miss Sweetness, I'd say, would pretty much be in that category. But yeah, I mean, what a legacy. But we're gonna.
It's broken, man. It's broken. Hold on, it's broken in there. I can put it in here.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're gonna move on African Rhythms to the final segment of Bobby Taylor talking, and that in this final segment from the original interview, he's talking about a track, Roses. There are roses somewhere for you and I. And this is a one-off single that he made in the 70s. So it just shows you the quality of Bobby Taylor, that after Motown, he does a one-off on Sunflower Records, and the quality, and as he says, this is 72, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the association with Hal David, ghostwritten, apparently, is what Bobby says. Yeah, no, so this is...
That's no accident. Hal David and Burt Bacharach, one of the greatest music writing and producing teams of all time. Oh, yeah. There's nothing BS about that.
Mike's too precious, man.
All right, well, let's...
Right on, you're so smart, man.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to this comment next.
The Mamas and the Papas.
Because they did.
Remember Bobby Roberts?
That was off your album.
Remember Bobby Roberts, them had Mamas and the Papas. And they had a partner who was the head of Old Records.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was doing his kids for him.
Yeah.
Right? And Mac David came in with one of the songs for these kids.
Yeah.
He and I met. He said, you know, I got a song over there, man. I sure would love it if you'd come over and just see what you think of it.
Yeah.
I went over. He says, would you do this for me? I said, sure. The heck? I said, you're David? I said, long as your brother is in on it. He said, well, my brother wrote it with me. And they don't even have his brother on there. And I know why. Because his brother was still under contract to somebody else.
A lot of that happened back
then. Oh, of course.
definitely one of the five greatest Bobby Taylor songs, in my humble opinion. There are roses somewhere for you and me, you know, just unbelievable. But to have Hal David involved, unbelievable.
Well, again, you dispense with all that BS when you have your peers recognize you in such a manner that they'll say, you need to see this person in order to make that song work.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Jason, it's as you listeners, as I've said, we've got Jason Hoover here in the studio, and he is the local soul legend. And right until pretty much the end of Bobby's life, Jason was in touch with him. And, you know, so it's been an honor to have you here, Jason. Thank you. You know. But anyway, we're gonna go out. Not quite yet. We've got a couple more tracks, but yeah. One we wanted to fit in, Mike. But anyway, Jason, it's great that you were able to keep in touch with Bobby almost right till the end.
Yeah, right to the end. It was almost it was too much. You know, I have to tell the audience out there you had something to do with it. He phoned me up and he said that our man had passed, and I broke down. I wasn't ready. I was watching TV. I was watching another program.
Yeah.
And if you remember David.
I do.
You're the one that passed me the word. And I fell apart because that was my mentor, man. I loved everything he did. I watched everything. I heard all the bad things. I heard all the good things. You know what I'm saying?
You knew him so well.
I knew him very well.
You know, like sometimes when other people didn't understand personal things about him, I knew that you knew, you know. And there was some personal things it was hard to even tell me or whatever because it was private things.
I know, but I tried very hard, but you know, you if anybody here in Vancouver should know you, I felt that you did. You've done a great job with your, you know, Northern Soul situation. The only white man that's really kicking you.
Well, that
north of the 49th parallel.
Well, that, my friend, is a compliment, so thank you. Well, that's certainly my goal, for sure. All right, well, let's whip into another track, and this is one of Mike and I's faves, Jason, and that's Windy City. Yes. Now we know where they're from.
Dancing's in the city, music's wall to wall. The way they got the lights is out of sight. But how could they know? Sammy's gotta go home, cause it's getting late. Susie's daddy came to make a fuss. Did she get home all right? We party heavy up in heels, dancing away our childish fears. We party heavy up in heels, no joke on the scene, and the man is standing outside. Bonnie told her mother she was going to see a friend who's supposed to live next door. But she's dancing with June. Cadillacs and Thunderbirds are parked outside, leaning all the way down to the ground. No fools came around. We party heavy up in here, dancing the way our childish fears. We party heavy up in here, no doors on the scene, and the man is standing outside. And the man is standing outside.
Oh,
Yeah, I couldn't wait too much longer to play some Barry production for you, Mike, because I know that was going to rock your world.
Barry Way and Gene Page. Gene Page doesn't get credit for being a great arranger, but that's
Tom Brock, another 20th century overlooked track.
Mm-hmm. All the 20th century stuff has always been like that. Very lush, string-induced. Barry, Gene. And I can't think of a 21st century song that was ever made that I didn't like, in at least the approach to it.
Yeah, no, it's what a label, and that one has been sampled in hip hop, so it's been getting some exposure, but definitely a sought after track. But we're going to go out with a couple more. I think Jason is off for the last part of the show this time, although we're going to have him back again soon. Mm-hmm. But we're going to go out with The Hesitations. It's A Way to Treat a Girl, which is fantastic Northern Soul. And another of our favorites, the Montclair's Unwanted Love, one of the more upbeat tracks. But it's been great to overview some Bobby Taylor. Mm-hmm. And just document the local impact he had on the scene and his connection to some of truly the great people in soul and pop music in general.
Rest in power, Bobby. You did good work when you were here, no question.
Yeah. All right. Well, take it out, my friend Mike.
Yes, sir. From Chilliwack to Commercial Drive, from the Okanagan to Oak Street, from King Edward to Kitsilano. If you want to know where the soul trees grow, the roots of it can be found right here on African Rhythms.
Peace and love.
I'm just an average guy, and I haven't much to give. What she wants me to be, the reason I'm living in orbit.